you, TJ, for leading us in songs tonight. Thank you all for being here. We're going to study tonight perhaps one of the most famous stories of the Bible, or at least one of them. Most everybody is familiar with the story of Daniel in the lion's den. Most every child is familiar with the story of Daniel in the lion's den. And there's a lot of great lessons we can learn, and I want to emphasize tonight the uncompromising life of Daniel, that we might be reminded to have that kind of spirit, that kind of strength, that kind of fortitude in our faith to stand for what is right. Do not allow the external pressure to override our internal principle, and Daniel certainly was one that did not allow that to take place. But before we talk about Daniel, let me speak about nations for a moment. For Daniel lived in three of them through his lengthy lifespan. You might recall that Daniel first was in Judah, in Jerusalem. He was among the first captives taken to Babylon. He would see Judah fall, and he would also live to see Babylon fall and live into the Medo-Persian Empire. And it exemplifies very well how nations are born, they live, and they die with great regularity. In fact, as you study history, you are indeed impressed by that fact that nations often leave the scene. The Hittites, the Egyptians, the Assyrians, the Babylonians, the Persians, the Medes, Greeks, Romans, all came, all went. Even our own continent over here in the Americas, you had the Mayans, the Incas, and the Aztecs that have all come and gone. In our even modern times, we might say, the greatness of France and Italy through Mussolini and Germany through Hitler, all nations rise and nations go. And I suspect even one day, even this great country of ours. Daniel knew the time was coming for the Babylonian Empire. And if you look there in Daniel chapter 4, you see when God finally says enough's enough. And Belshazzar, the king, had a great feast and ultimately had a lot of immorality taking place in this feast. And in amongst all of it, they had pulled out the golden articles that they had taken from the temple. And in verse 4, it says they drank wine and praised the gods of gold and silver, bronze and iron, wood and stone. And in the same hour, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote opposite the lampstand on the plaster on the wall of the king's palace. And the king saw the part of the hand that wrote. It materialized literally out of thin air. Then the king's countenance changed, and his thoughts troubled him, so that the joints of his hips were loosened, and his knees knocked against each other. Well, of course, he wants to know what these words mean, and nobody can tell him, until they finally say there is one that can. Daniel can. And so he calls for him, that he might know the interpretation. And Daniel doesn't hold anything back. And by the way, I need to add this too. The end of verse 7, he says, whoever gives me the interpretation will be elevated to third ruler in the kingdom. Daniel comes in and he says that to Belshazzar in verse 23, you've lifted yourself up against the Lord of heaven. They have brought the vessels of his house before you. And you and your lords, your wives, and your concubines have drunk wine from them. And you've praised the gods of silver and gold, bronze and iron, wood and stone, which do not see or hear or know, and the God who holds your breath in his hand and owns all your ways, you have not glorified. Here we have Daniel standing strong and firm and saying what was the truth to one who needed to hear it so badly, and ultimately declares the judgment sentence of God upon the Babylonian Empire. And after the interpretation is given of what was written on the wall, we see in verse 29, then Belshazzar gave the command and they clothed Daniel with purple and put a chain of gold around his neck and made a proclamation concerning him that he should be third ruler in the kingdom. Now Daniel was already elevated in the kingdom, but now he's even that much higher. And then the Bible tells us in verse 30, that very night, Belshazzar, king of the Chaldeans, was slain. And Darius the Mede received the kingdom, being about 62 years old. That very night, that empire fell. Fell really without a shot being fired. And it's a fascinating study if you study history of how the Medo-Persian army infiltrated the Babylonian walls. Nations come, nations go. And reminded that the Most High rules in the affairs of men. And while they will come and go, God's redemptive plan through His people, and in our day, through His church, will go on as scheduled. We don't have to worry what will take place to America, because God's kingdom is never stamped out fully like a nation can be. They transcend national destruction, though they may face great hardship in the process. God's kingdom shall stand forever, just as Daniel said. And so we find Daniel here in the midst of the Medo-Persian Empire. And it's important for us to note his age. He's probably in his 90s, at least his 90s. 70 years of Babylonian captivity he has lived through. In Daniel chapter 1, he starts somewhere in his 20s, perhaps teens. So he has been alive for a long time and has seen much take place. He has lived a full life. And here towards the end, we learn it was an uncompromising life. More on that towards the end. Let's take our Bibles and turn now to Daniel chapter 6. And let's begin the study of Daniel and the lion's den. In verse 1, it says, "It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be over the whole kingdom, and over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one." Very little doubt in my mind that there was some transfer here. As Daniel was third in the kingdom of Babylon, that there's just some transfer here of him recognizing his place. And it says that these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give an account to them so that the king would suffer no loss. And this Daniel, and that's important here, this Daniel himself distinguished himself above the governors, over the other two, and the satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him. And the king gave thought to set in him over the whole realm. So we start off here with the idea of promotion setting the backdrop of this story. Darius is over the kingdom, and we have 120 princes over the kingdom, and over the 120 are these three governors or chiefs. And among the three, Daniel shines like a bright shining star. He is preferred. He is considered for promotion. Now Darius, who's this Darius? We don't know too much about him. Some think perhaps it was just another name for Cyrus or Gamaru. But Darius wasn't his name. That was just a title, like king or pharaoh. Darius is used at least for five different Persian rulers. It's a title of honor and significance. But he must be very powerful to establish people over his entire kingdom. He is capable, he's effective, he's intelligent. But he's also without commitment to the true God, though he does indeed have interest in God's. So Daniel, the Bible tells us, verse 3, is preferred. Distinguishes himself. Very much like he did in the kingdom of Babylon. Because the Bible says he had an excellent spirit. What does that mean? It means that there was something different about his attitude. The way in which he approached life, the way in which he presented himself before the world. He had the right attitude. He was a hard worker, no doubt. He had experience. He has wisdom. He had a sense of history and leadership skills. And we know by God, he had the ability to interpret dreams and visions about the future. And so God had placed them in a very pivotal and key place in the kingdom. And it reminds us all that we need to also seek to be one that is before others with the right spirit, right? An excellent spirit, the right attitude. How do we show up at our jobs, at our workplaces, or at our school? Is it with an attitude that I really wish I wasn't here at all? Because that does shine through as well as a bad attitude. Most likely you won't be in line for promotion with that kind of attitude. But if you have the attitude that I work and I work hard for the Lord, then that will shine through. And Daniel always knew that, didn't he? He knew that God was his true manager for life. And so we see he lived this life pleasing to God first, and that came across to his peers and even his superiors as well. Well, this of course conjures up envy in the hearts of the other governors, right? They don't like this idea that Daniel's being considered for the promotion. Obviously, word has gotten out. Obviously, they realize that he is standing out before Darius's eyes. And whenever a man is lifted up, there's always going to be a certain price to pay. Sometimes you'll find yourself hounded by envy. People will seek to tear you down for it. Or to try to bully you, right? Or nowadays in schools, cyberbullying is very popular. Social media posts, you know, pictures of the person in unsavory moments or looking strange or weird. Whatever it can do to smear them. It can take place in school, it can take place in work, it takes place in the government. Sadly, sometimes it takes place in the church. Almost in every realm where one is lifted up, you'll have individuals seek to try and tear them down. So remember that. You live pure in an impure world and you will stand out. But because of that, we see a plot then was erected to try and oust Daniel. Verse 4 says, "So the governors and the satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault, because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him." What do we do? These men are confounded. How do we get rid of this Daniel? And someone had the crafty idea, verse 5. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." So they couldn't find any faults in Daniel at all. No Watergates, no skeletons in the closet. He was an honorable man. And let me tell you, that's rare to find today, and especially rare to find in governmental positions, where there's often scandals that take place, or corruption, political corruption, seems to be so frequent. But there's no corruption in this man. He is a man of virtue. He didn't cheat at work. He didn't cheat at home. He didn't cheat on any tests. Didn't cheat in his recreation. He just didn't cheat. Friends, could this be said of you and of me? Are we that pure that our fellow neighbors or friends or whoever it may be, our peers that see us, they say that, "Hey, I want to take him down, but I can't do it. I don't have anything against him. He hasn't given me anything to use him as a club to beat him over the head with." The only fault we can find in this man Daniel is his love for God. Ah, there's our opportunity. There's our opportunity. Let that be said of us as well. That if someone's going to seek to bring us down, let it be for our faith and not for our faults. And in so doing, we can be like the ultimate fulfillment of Matthew 5, 11 through 12. We're in the Beatitudes, right? Where it says, "Blessed are you when you're persecuted for righteousness' sake. When they revile you and say all kinds of evil things against you falsely for my name's sake." So they don't say evil things against you because you have crimes, but because of my namesake, Jesus said. So if we're to suffer, let it not be for sin or ruined reputation, some sex scandal, but let it be for right and not for wrong.
That's what Peter said in 1 Peter 4, verse 16. If anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed in this matter. So verse 6. These governors and satraps thronged before the king and said thus to him, King Darius, live forever. All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators, the satraps, the counselors and advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. Ah, this is how we're going to find fault with Daniel. We're going to have it against him and his God. We're going to pit the two against each other and see what takes place. Either way, he'll be a loser. King Darius, we've got this plan. And guess what? All the governors have consulted about this. That was a lie, wasn't it? Because Daniel was one of the governors. And most likely he wasn't asked at all. And he certainly would have not have gone along with this in agreement. So no, Daniel, the superior, the one that's considered for promotion, he wasn't agreeing to this. But perhaps the king might have been deceived. Now you've heard of queen for a day or a king for a day, right? Well, they're essentially putting on paper that you will be God for 30 days. O king, doesn't that sound good? Let me tell you, you have some bad theology when someone says that we've elected you, we've chosen you to be God. And when it's only for 30 days, you have even worse theology, right? God for 30 days and then it's over. And it stops, right? This is silliness. But to them it wasn't a problem. In the ancient days they often did. The Egyptians did the same thing with their pharaohs. They considered them like gods. The Romans believed the Caesars were like gods. So this was not uncommon for monarchs to be treated as deity. Even in this same book of Daniel chapter 3 with Nebuchadnezzar, and he essentially erects an image of gold, which no doubt in my mind would have been an image of himself since Daniel had declared him as the head of gold. Man in his pride, so willing and so often to be worshipped and flattered. Sadly, King Darius was swept away by the emotions of the whole deal. Often, kings would have to force people to worship them. And here they're volunteering. I mean, remember there in Daniel chapter 3, Nebuchadnezzar says, when you hear the sound of the horn, the flute, the harp, the lyre, and the symphony, all kind of music, then you must fall down. And if you don't, well, you're going to be burnt alive. Well, you didn't have to do any of that here. They're coming to him. Here they're volunteering. We're going to worship you. We're going to pray to you. And his ego was stroked. And verse 9 says, therefore, King Darius signed the written decree. And when he signed it, it became official law. And if you violate it, well, the punishment was to be cast into the den of lions. You ever heard of the phrase, I'm going into the lion's den? That's where it started. Right here. A lot of our phrases that we have that are like that often find their beginning back in some biblical illustration. Sometimes we use that to say we're going to go face some difficulties, right? But I'm sure they were never difficulties like this. An actual, literal lion's den. More on that later. Daniel had this as a consequence, staring him right in the face. So what does Daniel do next? Verse 10. Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, what did he do? How would he respond to that? He went home and in his upper room with his windows open towards Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since the early days. I like that. Daniel did what Daniel always did. He prayed. I see perseverance and persistence in prayer. Morning, noon, and night. That's what I would assume when he does it, says 3 times a day. Now someone might have said, well, couldn't you just close the window? Right? Couldn't you just made it less conspicuous? He could have reasoned or made it sound very sweet in his mind. You know, I could lose my job over this, right? Or he's not saying never pray again. I'll just pray again soon, right? But any compromise at all would have been read as self-serving. And that was not Daniel. Is that us when our faith is tested? If laws come down the pike and say you can no longer petition God, worship God, will we still do so? Sometimes governments test the waters with those things. Are we determined to be like Daniel? Think about what Daniel was willing to give up for prayer. He's willing to give up his life for that. And that's much greater than what many Christians today are willing to give up to worship God. Much less things can lead them astray or pull them away. Often it's the smallest things, the most trivial things that are put above worship. Almost anything can and is used as an excuse to not worship God. There's sometimes when there's the most famous football game in all the world, the Super Bowl, that some say, well, I come all the other times. But something as small as Super Bowl Sunday causes one not to come. When Daniel would rather die than give up prayer. There's even some churches that have done away with the Sunday evening service because of the football game. Friends, when God gets our leftovers, we don't see it as Daniel would have, which would have been a complete compromise of his convictions. Daniel would not change because the laws changed, and neither should we waver or change because, hey, you know, we got friends that want us to go along with them or to do this or to that or to watch this game or some particular activity that just happens to fall at the same time, sadly, as worship time. I mean, have we done that? Miss services, worship time, because of some activity? And if we have, are we convicted enough to give our life to worship God then? See, Daniel did as his custom was, and not even the consequence of death could change his custom, because I believe he realized how important it was to worship God, and in particular here with prayer. That's what the decree was about. He was going to continue to pray. You know, we just studied prayer for a whole quarter. We know how important prayer is. We of all people should know. Luke 18 verse 1, there the Lord had taught a parable that mentioned always ought to pray and not lose heart. Paul says in Colossians chapter 4 and verse 2, to continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it. 1 Thessalonians 5 verse 17, pray without ceasing. Is that our custom? As it's Daniel's custom? Have we changed at all since that quarter of study and prayer? Or have we slid back into our habits of old? How much is prayer worth to us? Read some stories of individuals. One guy told his preacher, he says, I pray for you every Tuesday. That's every Tuesday I'm going to think about you, think about your family, to pray for you. Heard of another man that wrote all of his prayers in a book and kept all the books and made this essential library of all his prayers that he prays. Heard of another of some young men that would go over to his older man's house to study with him. And that man would always start his day in prayer, kneeling by his bed. And they came to his house one day, and there they found him over his bed, dead. And when they pulled him back, there was his prayer book of the names he was praying for. And they said it sent a chill down their spine when they saw there was their names. How much do we believe in prayer? That we're willing to die praying or die for praying as Daniel was. I believe some believe in it and some don't, right? Some do and some don't. Daniel certainly did, and he would do as his custom was. Now the Bible tells us there in verse 11, these men, they saw it essentially right away, and they're going to launch into the prosecution of Daniel. Verse 11, these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God, and they went before the king. You know, they saw it right away. Probably got a sign in the morning, caught him praying in the afternoon, and then they came and sped walked their way back to the king. And then they read that petition before the king. They spoke concerning the king's decree. Verse 12, have you not signed a decree that every man who petitions any god or man within 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions? The king answered and said, the thing is true, according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter. So they read the law back to the king. They put the monkey on king's back. Hey, didn't you sign this? Of course I signed this. You know I signed this. Well, verse 13, this probably dropped on his head like a hammer. So they answered and said before the king that Daniel, you know who he is? He was the one you were going to put above us. The one of the captives from Judah. He's a foreigner. Well, he doesn't show due regard for you, O king, or for the decree that you've signed, but makes his petition 3 times a day. Oh. He doesn't regard you, king. We saw him. We saw him pray. You know, the king started out for God for a month and wound up as a fool in one day. Egg on his face. Because this hurt him. But in a different way than it did Nebuchadnezzar. Remember Nebuchadnezzar? He was furious when he found out Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego wouldn't bow before his idol. This one, the Bible tells us, verse 14, and the king, when he heard these words, was greatly displeased with himself. He'd been so silly to make such a hasty law. I should have known better. He knew who Daniel was. Most likely he now knows he had been set up in all of this. But it's too little too late, because the law of the Medes and Persians do not change. And so he's so displeased with himself. You know, I'm convinced he knew Daniel personally and knew him quite well. The king of the Persians had a closer relationship with their second in command. You remember the story of and Esther and Haman, and how frequently he was there with before the king of Persia. Well, this is the same empire. Daniel would in essence be like that Haman, the second in command. He'd been his right-hand man in some ways. So what does the king do? The end of verse 14 says, he set his heart on Daniel to deliver him. And he labored till the going down of the sun to deliver him. He's trying to think of all the ways that I can make this work. Execution was to come before nightfall. So he had all afternoon to think about it. And he exhausted every means possible. laboring till the going down of the sun, perhaps looking for some kind of loophole in the law, but there was no way out. So verse 15. Then these men approached the king and said to the king, "Know, O king, that it is the law of the Medes and Persians that no decree or statute which the king establishes may be changed."
And so this sadly brings about the penalty.
So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel.
Could you see that? That'd be hard to watch. There's my good friend. And he's about to die. He's about to suffer because of my mistake. And they take Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. Most likely this is some kind of pit or an overhang over some kind of cage, and he is cast into it.
And the king spoke, saying to Daniel, "Your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you."
Then a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet ring and with the signet of the Lord, that the purpose concerning Daniel might not be changed. I think it's interesting here when you break down this scene in the narrative. Daniel never says a word, does he? He never tries to defend himself. He doesn't plead for his life. And in a lot of ways, there's a parallel to Christ, right? Who opened not his mouth. Such confidence in God. Such confidence in his word. And really, what else could Daniel have said? Right? It's right to pray, so I kept on praying. Yeah, I prayed today and I'll pray tomorrow. That's who I am. That's what I do. I serve God without compromise. He couldn't have offered any apology for that.
And the law couldn't be changed. And so they commanded and brought him and cast him into the pit. Now remember, friends, this is a pit of lions. I mean, real lions. Purposely starved for execution. That's what they did in the past. Ferocious, hungry, powerful lions.
I think that's kind of the study that's coming up next, right, Thomas? In Bible class. On lions. You know, a few years ago in China, it made the news. A boy had stuck his arm in the lion's cage, and just with one swipe, the lion tore it from him like a toothpick. They're ferocious. Now, I don't know how many there were, but I assume there would have been a whole lot of lions there. Sometimes you see the pictures, and there's just like one or two or three. I don't think so. More on that later. I think there were a lot of lions here. Now, skeptics say there was only a few, and maybe Daniel, he found a corner to hide in and just kind of hid out to the morning light. No. Yeah, it was a big place, and he just kind of hid out to morning light. No. That's ridiculous. There was a lot of lions, and lions like you think of lions. Now, the king said, "Daniel, your God will deliver thee." How do you know that? How do you know about Daniel's God? Well, you know enough about Daniel that if he had been around for a few years, that Darius heard a couple of sermons, perhaps many lessons. Maybe that's one reason why he was being elevated in the kingdom. He knew about Daniel. He knew about Daniel's God. Perhaps he even knew what had taken place. In fact, most likely he knew what had taken place with the hand on the wall, "Meeni, meeni, tekel, upharsin," and how he had predicted it and how he translated it, and that happened that very night. And, "Oh, Darius, I would love this man and his God on my side." Maybe he even knew what happened with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in reading the logs there of Babylon. And how they stood firm, and that the fire did not harm them as they were in the pit. So this may be some of the fruit of Daniel's evangelism. Daniel, he said, "Your God, he is able. He will save you."
And so with that, the pit was sealed. It was sealed with the king's signet ring. And no one could break that seal to the morning light. The purpose could not be changed considering Daniel. And then you know what happens next? There's a scene change. Yeah, notice that. Verse 18, now the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting, and no musicians were brought before him, and sleep went from... Who cares, right? Well, what happened to Daniel the lion's den? I mean, again, if I'm there, I want to know what's taking place inside that den. What happens as soon as Daniel's dropped in there? God knows how to reveal a story, doesn't he? Right there in that cliffhanger. My kids know I love that. I try to read to them every night some stories. And we may not even be done with the chapter, because the chapter is really long. But I find a point where it's like, you know, and all of a sudden they were in danger. Good night, kids. We'll pick it up tomorrow. Oh, Dad, no, wake up, man. You've got to keep reading it. Oh, no. I got to have you come back for more. Well, Daniel's put in the lion's den. And now the king's over here reading. What? Well, that's the way the Holy Spirit has chose to reveal this story. Leave us wondering, what's taking place? Well, we know what's taking place with the king. He's anxious. He is nervous. He is beside himself. Right? He was mourning. There was no music, nothing to entertain him. Sleep goes from his eyes. He just paced around, counting the minutes. It must have seemed like an eternity. Have you ever been so nervous about something at night that it kept you up all night and you didn't sleep a wink? You could recount every second, every minute of that night. That's the king right here. That's the king. That tells you something about this king. He really cared about this servant. Daniel was a friend. And look at this verse 19. Then the king rose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. That means as soon as the sun was appearing, there's the king. Can you see him in your mind's eye? He's running. The dignified king. The people say to one, oh, king, live forever and all that kind of fancy stuff. You're so great. All that's gone. And he's running to see what happened to Daniel, his upright servant. It makes you see and believe that Daniel was much more than just a servant. You don't run for a servant. This was a friend. Think about it. If something would happen to you, would your boss, would your teacher, would your coach, would they run for you? Would they run to see what has happened to you? Get over there as fast as they possibly can. This king did that for Daniel. That's impressive to me. He cared about Daniel. So he's hustling to the den. And there, verse 20. When he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice. What kind of voice? A lamenting voice. The Bible wants us to hear it in our mind's ear, what this voice sounded like. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, Daniel! Servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? I didn't make up that tone. The Bible said it. That was his tone. It was lamenting. He was hurting. And it indicates that he had some kind of faith. He cries out, because you don't do that unless you think maybe, just maybe, there's a chance that he's alive. So he's hoping for the best. He calls out, Daniel, I know you are the servant of the living God. Not a dead God. Not like those idols, right? Obviously, Daniel's taught this man. There's a distinction between your gods, the gods of the land, that are dead, that are stone, that are wood. Mine's a living God. Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, has He spared you and saved you?
come to preservation next.
And I have to wonder in my mind as I'm thinking about the story, how many seconds go by before Daniel replies, right? I mean, it must have felt like minutes to the king waiting for a reply. I don't know how long, but then verse 21, a voice comes from the pit, and Daniel said to the king, "Oh, king, live forever." Oh, he's alive. "My God sent his angel and shut the lion's mouths, so they have not hurt me, because I was found innocent before him. And also, O king, I have done nothing wrong or no wrong before you. My God has preserved me." He sent his angel. Kind of like he did with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? That extra one that was found within the fiery furnace. Well, not only are angels powerful enough to stop the effects of fire, we see the angels had shut the mouths of the lions. And might I add as well, stop the paws of the lions? Because even though their mouths might have been shut, they could have still clawed Daniel to death. Just one angel. That's all it would take. Angels are powerful. And he's saying, "Listen, God did it because I was innocent. And I didn't do any wrong before you." In essence, he said, "I did right by obeying God's law and disobeying your law. I was innocent." And let's remember that. Acts 5:29, it's better to obey God rather than man. Whenever we do that, we do right by God and we also do right by man. We're innocent. So the king, he was glad. You know how glad he was? The Bible tells us, verse 23, the king was exceedingly glad for him. And he commanded that they should take Daniel up out of the den. So you see how he was taken up and out? So Daniel was taken up and out of the den. So it was a pit he was thrown into. And no injury whatever was found on him, because he believed in his God. They let the ropes down. He climbs up. That's amazing to me. He's 90 years old. He's obviously in still kind of some kind of shape. I don't know. Maybe they had something where he could put around his waist and be pulled up. But there's a lesson I want us to get right here. He says, I was saved, he said, no injury, because he believed in his God. Believing and being faithful to God, it doesn't always mean that the lions will never eat you. God's in control either way. It just depends on his plan, right? And God obviously determined there was more for Daniel to do. There have been thousands, if not millions, of martyrs that have died faithful to the Lord. There was even a time during the Roman Empire where many Christians were fed to the lions in the Colosseum. And it's a heartbreaking story when you read of some of the martyrs that took place in those times. You can read in the Bible, there's Stephen, who was the very first Christian martyr in Acts chapter 7. Paul later would die for his faith. James, the brother of John, run through with the sword in Acts chapter 12. Anipas was the Lord's faithful martyr. In Revelation chapter 2, he died. So the issue is not whether we'll live or die. The issue is, will we accept God's will whether we live or die? If we live, we live. If we die, we die. Either way, we're still all right. We're not defeated. The victory is the uncompromising life. You see, if Daniel would have died in the den of the lions, shred to pieces by those ferocious beasts, the angel still would have been there. He would have merely come to carry Daniel to Abraham's bosom. And truly, that's our final destination. That's what we're spending our lives, our whole lives, to be able to do, to be one day. And that's closer to God. We must always pray God's will be done in such circumstances. And if we are faithful, then it's going to be all right either way. in life or in death, we are not defeated if we've lived an uncompromising life. Well, next, this brings on the punishment. In verse 24, the king gave the command, and they brought those men who had accused Daniel, and they cast them into the den of lions, them, their children, and their wives. And the lions overpowered them and broke all their bones in pieces before they ever came to the bottom of the den. Remember I said there were a whole lot of lions? It's because there's a whole lot of people who are going to be tossed in there, and they're all going to be devoured before one finger touches the ground. This is the vengeance of God pictured here. Now, the ungodly, they might think they have the upper hand for today, and they forget that there's always going to be a judgment day, one tomorrow. The psalmist says, therefore the ungodly shall not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. That's Psalm 1, verses 5 through 6. And by the way, Persian law, the law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be altered, it was even followed here. That law which states, on the account of the guilt of one, all their kindred shall perish. That too was law. And that too could not be broken. And so they didn't only destroy themselves, but everyone they loved as well. That's the effects of sin. The judgment of God will come down upon those that are in that sin. Well, from punishment we go to proclamation. In verse 25, then King Darius wrote, to all peoples, nations, and languages that dwell in all the earth, peace be multiplied to you. I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men must tremble in fear before the God of Daniel. For he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall not be destroyed. And his dominion shall endure to the end. He delivers and rescues, and he works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth, who has delivered Daniel from the power of the lions. Darius wrote this to everybody. You must fear the God of Daniel. See, here we have one man who literally affects the entire empire. Friends, it doesn't take a lot of people. It just takes the right kind. Are we that kind? Here is an aged man, but he's an uncompromising man. And he affects the laws of a nation. We need to seek to be like this. Seek to follow God's commands. Seek to lead a pure life. Seek to be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord. But if we've been shaky, or in secret sin, then we need to repent and get right with God fast and see what God can do. He can use the useful. God used this one Daniel, and an entire empire is impacted. Here's a pagan king, and he sounds like the psalmist, doesn't he? Daniel's God works signs and wonders, and he delivers. Notice he says there at the 26, halfway down, verse 26, for he is the living God and steadfast forever. His kingdom is the one which shall what? Not be destroyed. That's exactly what Daniel said. He must have told King Darius. And he's proven through his stand that God's kingdom will stand. And Darius believes it. And in all this, who gets the glory? We see it's God, right? It's not Daniel. Not Daniel for a minute. But it's God who does. You must fear and tremble before the God of Daniel. It is He that is the living God, not a dead one. God gets the glory. Remember that. Matthew chapter 5 talks about that. That men and women will see our good works and glorify our Father who is in heaven. That's where we want the glory to be. And so there in verse 28, so this Daniel what? Prospered.
in the reign of Darius and the reign of Cyrus the Persian. God continued to bless him, and no doubt he would be second, right? He would be lifted up to next in command, especially as the other governors were eliminated by execution. I got one more P left on this outline. I got promotion, plot, prayer, persecution, penalty, preservation, punishment, proclamation, prospered, and last but not least, perseverance. Remember how we started off? Nations came and nations went. As Isaiah says, they're like a drop in the bucket. They're like dust on scales. They're nothing before God. And yet we see this one man, this one faithful man, Daniel, and he lives through three kingdom changes: Judah and Babylon and to finally Medo-Persia. This span of 70 years. How? Because he was faithful. And at the very beginning of his life, he purposed in his heart not to defile himself. Daniel chapter 1 and verse 8. See, he was a courageous old person because he was first a courageous young person. He had persevered through life. He had made that commitment to be steadfast to God. And God treasures that. That's something to God. Because He knows how often it is that we can become wishy-washy or waffle in our commitments. You ever started a diet before? Right? Began a gym, right? Whatever. We know what it's like to start something and not finish something. Daniel wouldn't be like that. He'd persevere. He'd stand strong to the end. So, we must remember that. God's ways don't ever change. It's people that do. But Daniel didn't. He was willing to defend what he believed, whether he was young or whether he was old. Unwilling to allow the changing of empires, the changing of monarchs, the changing of laws to change his conviction. His internal principle would always be stronger than the external pressure. Because he would lead an uncompromising life. And Daniel's recorded so that we might be reminded that we can too. See how this is a story for both young or old, wherever you're at. You can't say, young person, oh, wait till I'm older and that's what I'm going to do, take my stand. No, that's not the way it works. Daniel chapter 1, purpose in his heart. I'm taking my stand now. And he committed to that and kept that. Say, oh, I got a long time before I get there. It's not as long as you think. I mean, it's Daniel chapter 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Five chapters, right? It's like a life. It's five short little chapters. What's it going to be like at the end for you? Might be a better question to ask, what is it right now for you? See? He stood on his principles of standing fast with God, and he built that foundation over the course of his life. And God is encouraging us through the story of Daniel that we should do the same as well and lead an uncompromising life. If you're not a Christian, would you become one? Have your sins washed away in the blood of the Lamb? And then commit to God to grow strong in your faith. And if as a Christian you've been tossed to and fro, every wind of doctrine, whatever it is, may be in Ephesians chapter 4, or perhaps by immorality in life, and you've become unstable, then think about Daniel and approach your God in prayer for help to be stable. I mean, is that not what life's all about? I mean, what are we here for? Most likely Daniel thought he would die in that den. But he would die standing for the truth. I mean, that's what I would think if I was thrown in a lion's den. That's the rational thing to think. God saved him. And there's a lesson in that as well. But we're not here in life to escape death. Death is going to come. We're here in life to live the life that we do have, to be faithful unto death, so that we might receive the crown of life. That's what we're here for. And so if you as a Christian haven't been standing faithful until death, then we're here to pray for you as well and assist you. Won't you come while together we stand and while we sing? Shame to own my Lord, nor to defend His cause. Maintain the honors of His word, the glory of His cross. Firm as His throne, His promise stands, and we can well secure. What I've committed to His hands till the decisive hour, then will He own my worthless name before His Father's face. And in the new Jerusalem, appoint for me a place.